introductions are made, I will call the second case 99-2234CR State v. Hrowitzky. And Donald Lang is at the podium. He is an assistant public defender representing the defendant here. Counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, Don Lang appeared on behalf of the defendant appellant petitioner Jason Hrowitzky. This case is on a petition for review from the Court of Appeals decision, which affirmed convictions for one count of burglary, 10 counts of theft taking, and 5 counts of theft concealing, all as part of your crime and all with a criminal gang enhancer. For the sake of the audience, basically the record shows that Jason, who was 16 at the time, along with at least 3 other youths, accompanied a girl who was a runaway to her parents' home while they were away at work. That while inside the residence, several of the youths gathered up 10 guns, firearms, brought them downstairs, placed them on a blanket or sheet in the kitchen. That one of the other youths, Christopher Schock, rolled up the blanket and carried out to the trunk of the car. Later that night or early the next morning, 5 of the guns were wrapped in plastic, driven out under a bridge, and stashed there. And basically the principal question here today is whether or not charging 10 counts of theft of firearms for a single act of taking and charging 5 counts of concealing firearms for a separate act of concealing them, single act, is in violation of the double jeopardy prohibition against multiple punishments for the same offense. And basically the case law makes it pretty clear that the bottom line of the analysis in these kinds of cases comes down to looking at the intent of the legislature. Did the legislature intend to be multiple charges in this context? It's petitioner's position that if you look at the language, structure, and history of the theft statute, that the legislature did not intend multiple charges to arise out of a single act of taking. That while the legislature could have made such a crime and created such a crime, the legislative scheme that currently exists did not accomplish or intend to achieve that end. That essentially what the legislature has done is make the theft of a firearms a form of penalty enhancer, such that if the firearm is involved in the theft, the penalty is automatically a Class D felony, which now is 10 years, used to be 5, regardless of how cheap the gun happened to be.
Also, would it make any difference? And I think the statute refers to a firearm rather than firearm. But would it make any difference as to what we're talking about? Here we're talking about guns, a firearm. We could be talking about if a person steals cars, if he or she would take 3 cars at the same time. Imagine that. Would that be just one count? Because it might make a difference as to what is being taken and the circumstances surrounding the taking of that, the theft of that, because you had parties to a crime here, you had different elements that would have to be shown, perhaps, as to what different people did. Firearms have, certain identifying marks. They have numbers. Most of them, even shotguns, have some identifying marks on them. I'm just asking that as far as the type of thing that was taken here. Would that...
It's not so much... The question's a good one. I think automobiles are automatically in a different category because they're covered by a different statute. The problem that arises in this case is...
Which what then allows multiplicity? No, I'm just...
Well, I'm not sure, actually. Yeah. I'd have to look at the...
Okay.
Actually, it's operating without owner's consent statute. And
well,
that may or may not...
Charge for the theft and that. She need different elements.
If it's under 2 different statutes, by and large... In most instances, multiple charges are going to be permissible. And I think that's the important thing about this case. This is sort of a narrow category of cases. And we sort of get these merged together, but multiplicity cases come in at least two and perhaps arguably three varieties. The ones that come under different statutes, it's pretty clear that in most instances, you're going to be able to charge in both statutes. Wisconsin has a prohibition if they're lesser included of one another, but if they're not, then clearly the legislature permits two prosecutions. 939-65 pretty much indicates that that's the option. This case is one of those where it's under the same statute, and the more complicated factor here is that it's a single transaction as well.
Mr. Lang, one of the things that you said as you started out this morning was that the bottom line here was the intent of the legislature, and I really tend to agree under the circumstances of this case that's correct. If we're looking at the intent of the legislature, isn't it significant that the legislature changed the statute from the value tied to the taking of a firearm to the taking of a firearm because of the dangerousness of the item being taken? It appears pretty clear from the information that the state gives us in its brief that that's what the legislature was doing here in restructuring this statute. Isn't that significant when we try to look at the intent of the legislature in this case?
And the answer is partly yes, partly no. Did the legislature design to deter the theft of firearms? No question about it. The question is, what is the method they used to achieve that end? And the method they used was to increase the penalty when there's a theft that occurs.
And
they didn't create a separate crime of firearms.
To tied to a monetary value of the item.
That's right. So no matter what firearm you steal, if it's a $25 cheap gun, it's a five-year felony, no matter what. The important thing is, though, it comes in the form of a penalty enhancer. It is not does not change the nature of the underlying crime. The crime itself, and it's important to bear this in mind because we're talking about firearms here and it's serious and everybody knows it's serious, but the ultimate crime here that's really at issue is theft of movable property. That's what the crime is. And just adding an increased penalty when it's a firearm doesn't change the nature of the elements of the underlying crime. One of my concerns with the way the Court of Appeals addressed this issue, it says, well, you know, the defense raises a bunch of hypotheticals. If we apply this multiplicity approach, it'll lead to absurd results. Well, we don't need to worry about that. We're talking about firearms. Well, you can't segregate out firearms from the rest of the statute. It's one whole here. And there's really not a principled way to say, well, we're going to treat the firearms differently because, you know, we all think it's serious. But the legislature didn't do it that way. They threw it in with a statute of theft of movable property. And the elements haven't changed at all what the crime is.
Counsel, I think you're finished with that now. I don't want to interrupt you. Okay. Now, that light bulb came on to me, and I didn't necessarily get that from the argument in your brief. Maybe I didn't carefully enough read your brief. I certainly didn't find it in the Court of Appeals opinion. That is the argument that the charge here and the conviction here is the movable, the theft, the general theft. And then you look at the statute, and the statute, 943.20 is the charge of theft. The statute then, in sub 3, has penalties for that crime, the crime of theft. And that it comes under a penalty enhancer, not as a separate crime. Now, again, maybe I missed that in your brief, but that's what came to my mind, and it particularly came to my mind because I was looking at the jury instructions. And the jury instructions for theft, 943.20.3d, recommend that the verdict be this way. Number one, it says, and this is in their footnote, the top part of their footnote to 943.23d. It says, this is your proposed verdict. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of theft under 943.20 at the time and place charged in the information. then the jury is instructed. If you find the defendant guilty, then the following question, yes or no, and then you go into, was it a firearm that was taken? I mean, that, at least to me, from the jury instruction committee's point of view, highlights what you're now arguing. Did you argue that in your brief? And I just
The court
of appeals, however, did not address or embrace that at all, did it? The separate crime. They treated theft of a firearm as though it were a separate criminal offense.
Absolutely. And I guess to in defense, I'll call it defense of the court of appeals. I think fairly the legislature could do that. They could make it a separate crime such that taking each firearm is a separate crime.
Can I just ask you a question about this? It's only enhanced if the property is a firearm if the value of the property is less than $2,500. If the value of the property is over $2,500, it doesn't matter that it's a firearm.
No, the state has the option. They can take the benefit of the more valuable firearm and charge him.
Sure, because that's a Class C felony, but it's a Class D if it's less than $2,500 and it's a firearm. So that goes really into increasing the penalty where the regular penalty is Class, what is it, if it's less than $2,500, Class E pushes it up to D, that which means that the punishment is increased. Do you know what I'm driving at?
Well, yeah, if it's a very valuable gun, it's Class C. I think it's 15 now, it was 10 at the time of the crime.
Right.
The defendant doesn't get a windfall by stealing a gun and avoiding the penalty for having a valuable gun. It's over, the legislature would have the option.
You add all of the property that was stolen or each piece of property.
Customarily, the nature of the theft or statute is you aggregate the value of the property.
Take $2,500, maybe a $10 gun, but take $2,800 worth of property, so it would not, and it was aggregated that way, it wouldn't, the fact that it was a firearm wouldn't increase the penalty.
That's correct.
There's
one enhancer, I don't think you multiply the enhancers, because the crime itself, as it's set forth in the theft statute, is the taking of property. The penalty can be gauged by the circumstances. It's interesting language. Whoever violates sub 1, in other words, you have to have committed the crime of theft before you get to the penalty enhancer question. And that's really what the jury instructions committee did. They said, well, if you're found guilty, then you must determine, well, theoretically there are 6 different enhancers that might apply. This one just happens to be the firearm enhancer.
What do you do here, though? This jury wasn't asked it that way. They were given a verdict that says we, the jury, find the defendant guilty of theft of a 98-7-92 bolt-action German WW gun firearm as a party to the crime. What do you do when the verdict sets forth the enhancer as though it's part of the substantive offense?
I don't think it really makes a difference. The instructions of the jury can't change the unit of prosecution intended by the legislature. Under these circumstances, in effect, the jury made all the findings necessary to impose the enhanced penalty, but it only applies to one count of theft because there was only one taken. So under these particular circumstances, the instructions don't match the standards that the jury instructions committee has drafted, but I don't think that's really material to the outcome. It's still only one theft, and they have made a finding through their instructions that it was a firearm. So I don't think that makes a difference. It's not to my claim.
So what should you win? What is it you expect here?
Well, with regard to this particular claim, he doesn't win a whole lot, I guess, quite candidly, because most of the probation terms are ordered to run concurrent. So as a practical matter, it doesn't change his structure. It substantially reduces the number of judgments. In his particular
case... What are the judgments that you would set? Because you're going back for resentencing, so you expect us to say what the judgments are that are valid. What judgments are
valid? Basically, it would be one count of theft remains, of taking out of the 10 counts of theft taking. And one count of theft concealing would remain out of the 5 counts of theft concealing.
So you think there's only one count of theft and one count of concealing?
Well, they both theft, because they're subcategories.
But you accept that there are two, that that's not multiplicitous?
Tappa, I think, resolved that question that was debated then. Tappa's sort of interesting, because although it didn't expressly address this issue, the way they handled the charges was in a fashion that I suggest today, and that is there were multiple guns involved, but they only charged them separately. When he concealed the guns, they charged them separately for each individual transfer of the guns. They didn't charge multiple counts for each gun that was involved.
Counsel, let me ask you, face this before, as do the location of the guns make any difference? Does the time make any difference? Would it make any difference if one gun was in the car, one gun was in the house, one gun was in the barn? It'd be all the same. Is that...
Pretty much. And I'll try to distinguish, because I think it depends.
Yeah.
You know, Professor Remington, when he talked about theft, well, if you take a suitcase with stuff in it, you're not going to be charged with each item in the suitcase. Likewise, if you grab two suitcases, it's not a separate crime for each suitcase. Fortuitous events such as the size of the thief's hand, the manner in which he picks things up, the place within the house where he gets it, to divide offenses up as to a unit of prosecution based on those leads to absurd results. If I take 5 quarters and I scrape them into my hand, is that one theft? But if I pick 2 here and 2 off the end tables, it become 2 crimes. I don't know that there's a meaningful way
to trust. Different owners. What if it was my car, and then I parked at my brother-in-law's home, and it was his gun, so I've got my guns, his guns, and somebody else's. So you've got 3 different owners of guns, so you're suggesting that that would be multiplicity.
I think, basically, the theft statute is a single transaction of taking.
This case is
sort of interesting because of the
danger. No matter what the ownership or...
Yeah, I don't think ownership. Well, it's taking property of another. Who the particular owner is, I don't think is...
So you could have 6 different owners in 6 different locations, but because it happened in one single act between a period of 1 in the morning and 5 in the morning, that would be one act? Is that what you're saying?
That's my position, yes.
Even if they're different locations.
Well, it depends on how different the location. I go into one person's house, they go to the next person's house. That's different.
No, but you go in one person's car and you go to one person's house. Certainly there's a difference.
The house and the car may be different in terms of completely separate offenses being committed. Hypothetical, there's a couple of them. One is, in this case, there was a theft the day before. They took one of the guns. My client wasn't involved in that, but assuming he had been, to me that's clearly a separate theft. If the guns were too heavy and they had to make 2 trips to the car, that's one transaction. The fortuitous fact that one guy could carry them all, or you had somebody who was small and they had to make 2 trips, that doesn't make them twice the criminal as the other person.
Does it make a lot of sense to do it then? What's the rationale behind this one act? That there was no intention of the legislature to have multiple acts.
Well, there are a couple things. One is just the nature of the theft statute itself. It has a broad crime of taking movable property, and it gauges the crime based on the value of the property, not particular items taken. Secondly, if you start breaking down by the items, where do you draw the lines? Is 1 CD one theft, but 2 CDs 2 thefts? There's a discussion in the Court of Appeals decision, well, the guns are different because we can tell them apart. Well, that, that sort of begs the question, because you can tell a lot of pieces of property apart. Somebody would certainly know the difference between a Barry Manilow and an NSYNC CD. If you were to take both of those, that doesn't make it two crimes, because you can tell them apart.
You don't think the legislature had any special meaning in mind for firearms as opposed to CDs? Or there's this one, the chicken case, where you have 5,000 chickens, so you'd have 5,000 different charges?
And my answer is, they obviously had a different thought for firearms than CDs. The extent of firearms involved, you're going to face a more severe penalty no matter how valuable they are. But in terms of unit of prosecution, no. And the reason I say that in part is it's hard to separate, and you can't separate out the property as a firearm from the six other categories of enhancers that are involved there. There's nothing in the language or the structure or the history, frankly, the statute, which would permit you to look at the statute and say, well, the legislature meant to change the unit of prosecution as to this one particular item, but none of the others. If you use the notion that each item is a separate crime, and you begin using that proposition with the other six enhancers, then you start getting into the absurd results. The flood, if there's a flood down in Prairie du Chien, and somebody goes into the store and grabs chips, soda, cigarettes, candy bar, is that four separate thefts so that they're facing 40 years in prison? I don't think the legislature designed that kind of scheme.
Mr. Lang, Justice Babichek.
The choice of penalty enhancer would depend on the value of those items. The state could submit two options as special verdicts for the jury, and I think choose the benefit of the most favorable, such that if it's a firearm, you could get the benefit of at least the Class D felony. If that's a special sweater from the islands of Ireland that's worth, you know, a couple thousand dollars, you could perhaps be subject to the 15-year felony because the value of the property exceeds $2,500.
But that's different, arguably, than what Justice Wilcox was talking about in one of, part of his question about the continuous act of activity. I mean, the continuous activity, which would start on a Thursday night and they go to between the hours of 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. the next morning, they hit three different houses. That's and there are cases that deal with continuous activity.
I wouldn't fairly characterize three different houses as being a continuous transaction. That to me is fairly separate and distinct acts of theft.
Three counts.
Those would be three.
Those, that's what I mean. That's three counts. Yeah. I mean, but when you have a one action, you're alleging you can't nuance that down. Your argument is one stack of baseball cards, even though you know, you've got Eddie Matthews and Luke Burdett, et cetera, et cetera. Not each one is a separate offense, right?
And that would be one theft, not multiple thefts. And like baseball cards, no one. Somebody who's interested in baseball knows quite well that there's a difference in the items that is articulable. But it's not a basis for finding multiple thefts when you take a stack of differentiated cards. The situation here, this one, the facts here are actually fairly easy, except we basically have a Santa Claus thing going on where he loads them all up and carries them all at one time. But I don't think that's really determinative here. Had there been a couple of people and they carried them, a few in each hand, that wouldn't really change what the transaction here. It's hard to think logically that it would change the transaction. The number of offenses should not turn, and I think Professor Remington's point is that it shouldn't turn on fortuitous events in the manner in which you pick something up. Whether you pick them one at a time off the counter, or whether you roll them into your hand, whether you grab a stack of CDs in one hand, or you go through and are a little more selective and take, you know, three different fashion. That is one transaction, one act of taking. and that's the way the theft statute is devised.
Do you have any legislative history about this?
There isn't a whole lot that's very helpful. I mean, the relating statute for the actual bill that became the law, I guess it was 1977, Assembly Bill 130, it just broadly, in the relating clause, says making theft of dangerous weapons a felony. And then they changed it to a firearms part because dangerous weapons entail a bunch of fact-finding that might get complicated.
They changed it to firearm. Firearm.
A firearm, yeah.
Firearm.
And I argue in the brief, and I point out that by statute, the singular means the plural, the plural is singular, and the use of the singular here isn't very helpful in discerning unit of prosecution. In terms of the domestic animals in comparison, if you take that analysis that that's what the legislature meant, you'd also have to apply it elsewhere in the statute, because there's no indication that the legislature meant the same language to mean something different in this context. And frankly, the statutes presume that it will be treated both as the plural and singular. Act under the proposition that the legislature knows the rules when it makes passes a law, and we have to assume that the legislature was aware by using the singular they were also plural. They could have specified otherwise, they didn't do so.
Mr. Lang, isn't it reasonable to assume that the legislature, in the way they structured the statute, had some concern that every time a firearm is taken, that firearm could be placed in the hands of a criminal and therefore arm that criminal, so that there's some reason to draw a distinction between chickens and firearms?
We can speculate that they have that in mind. As a matter of public policy, reasonable people would have that in mind. But that's not what they did. And the whole notion, and this is what Missouri Hunter was talking about. The job of the court is to look and see what the legislature did. If they meant multiples, that's what they get to have, is multiples. If they didn't do it, it's not the role of the court to try to guess at public policy about what they may have thought about doing. Would it make sense to have a separate crime for stealing each firearm? Yeah, it probably would make sense to do that. Did they do that? No, they didn't do that. Should this court do it because it might make sense to do it? No, it shouldn't do that, because it's the role of the legislature to define crimes, the role of the court to apply what the legislature has done. And the legislature in this provision simply didn't do it. They simply didn't do it. And to say, well, firearms are different, we're going to treat it different, and don't worry about Mr. Lang's other suggestions about bad hypotheticals. Well, you can't really do that in a principled way. They're all set out in the same fashion, and if the legislature hasn't provided you any guidance to treat it differently, it's very hard to say, well, we're going to treat it differently.
Well, don't they punish theft of a firearm more harshly than something of a comparable value? That seems to me showing the intent of the legislature as far as the particular item.
And they treat the theft of a chicken as something more serious, regardless of the chicken being worth $5. They treat the theft of potato chips taken out of a store that's foot damaged, regardless of whether the potato chip's worth 25 cents.
Well, they do the same thing
with
timber theft, too. But I mean, this has to do with the dangerousness. This is the question that Justice Crooks asked. The ultimate dangerousness to society and getting in the hands of someone else.
See, and I beg to differ. That the issue isn't the dangerousness of the weapon. The issue is, what did the legislature do? Now, it may well be they could do something different because of the danger, but they didn't do it. And that's really the question, boiled down to its bare. I guess that time's up.
Could I ask another question?
Oh, sure.
I want to make sure I understand the principle that you're arguing. If we were not, well, we could be talking about a house, but let's suppose we were talking about an art gallery. And there's a burglary, that's one count. But five paintings are stolen at the art gallery, each with a value of $25,000. What's your position on that?
One crime. Max to the maximum penalty that could be imposed for the value. If you sell them, it's another crime. If you deliver them to somebody else, it's another crime. Transfer them. If you conceal them somewhere, it's a separate crime. But it's only one crime for the taking.
Class C felony.
Class would be valuable payments. Separate crime, of course, for the burglary to get in there in the first place.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. You will have 5 minutes to rebuttal. Mr. Lang?
May it please the court, my name is Sandy Nowak. I'm an assistant attorney general. I represent the plaintiff respondent in this case, the people of the state of Wisconsin. The state asked this court to reach two conclusions, affirming the decision of the Court of Appeals. First, that the appropriate unit of prosecution for the crime of theft of a firearm is each individual firearm, and that that is true even when 10 separate thefts occurred during the course of a single burglary.
And that would be true if it were chickens.
That would be chicken. True if it were chickens.
Chicken, paintings, firearms, suitcases, baseball cards.
Jelly beans,
anything.
There.
Each unit of that property.
Potentially. I would make a distinction with the baseball card analogy, for example. I think there is a difference if someone walks in and picks up a pile of baseball cards. That person appears to be a unit in a single act without differentiating each of the items. I disagree with Mr. Lang in that I believe that if someone walked in, sorted through baseball cards, maybe saw two clusters of baseball cards, and took knowing that they contained the more valuable cards, then I think that a reasonable prosecutor could use his or her discretion to charge individual counts of theft.
Let's just take it from a house so it's not packaged. Packaged is different. Just a house in several packs. Just you have no reason to know they're in any separate order. You take as many as you can. You put them in your sack. One crime, one count, or several counts?
I believe if you knew the nature of the items, that it could be separate counts. Now, in the first...
Who has to know?
In the first, the actor. But I think that that's the first part of the analysis, whether they're different in law or different in fact.
What about you see these firearms and you put them all in the suitcase, in your suitcase, and take them out? Do you have to know there's a difference that some are more valuable than others?
No, and that is the distinction in this particular definitional part of the statute, in that the legislature has said that a firearm is different than the kind of conglomerate use of the phrase any movable property. And the fact that an actor recognizes that something is a firearm and takes a volitional act to remove that firearm, whether they package them together for their own convenience or not, would indicate a separate volitional crime, a fork in the road, so to speak, under ICE, wherein they could have left one weapon or taken the next.
Suppose you took 6 firearms and the total value of that was over $2,500. How many counts?
6.
6 counts.
Yes, one for each firearm. The language of the statute is really unambiguous. That the language says a firearm, and if you combine the theft statute with the provision at 970.136, which allows prosecutors, that's a permissive statute, which allows prosecutors to aggregate crimes, that the language of those two statutes together says that we may aggregate, but we need not.
How do you address the argument that firearms appears not in any, and I'm saying this arguably, appears not in any substantive crime? I mean, the legislature has not said whoever intentionally takes and carries away, uses, transfers, conceals, or retains possession of a firearm of another without the owner's consent and with intent to deprive, etc. I mean, that, I think your opposing counsel would concede, is a substantive crime of taking and carrying away a firearm of another with intent to deprive the owner permanently of the possession thereof. But that's not what the statute says.
the firearm is only referenced in the penalty. So how do you get around that? Is the word penalty superfluous and we should not consider that?
No, Your Honor, and there are two reasons. First, in that I would disagree fundamentally with Mr. Lang's assessment of the way the statute is laid out. First, if you look at the language of the statute, the first word is act, and then it mentions the penalty.
Can you slow down? So you're talking about sub 1, it says acts, right?
Yes.
So you're talking about 943.20 sub 1 says the word acts, and that's what you're referring to. Okay.
Right. And then it says whoever does any of the following, thereby incorporating the language beneath. Now, if you consider that this language in 943.20 does not say that theft of any item is a Class A misdemeanor unless the following conditions exist, the statute requires that the prosecutor in pleading actually identify a penalty. So in the very definitional nature of the crime requires that we specify either a monetary value or the identity of the object.
How do you deal with, again, knowing jury instruction committee is not necessarily the law, but the committee sets forth in its footnote dealing with the theft and the penalties, the suggested verdict of, you know, we, the jury, find the guilty, the defendant guilty of 943.20. And then after they find them guilty of the substantive offense, then they're supposed to be asked a special question addressing the penalty. If you find the defendant guilty, answer the following question. Was the property taken? That seems to undermine the thesis that there is a substantive offense of theft of a firearm in the mind of the criminal jury instructions committee.
Well, first, that may be an indication that the jury instruction committee is waiting for advice from this court. In the absence of other law, they may have elected that language. However, as you pointed out, in this particular case, the jury instruction was not posited as a special question. And in fact, in this case, the prosecutor presented both options, and both the defendant and the court opted with making it an all-or-nothing situation. In other words, either the state proves that each of those weapons are firearms that the defendant intended to take and deprive the owner. But I also would like to call to your attention, in the appendix page 104 of the state's brief, the drafter's note talks about, and I'll read the first sentence, which I think again supports the state's position that this is, that the firearm penalty is actually part of the definitional portion of the crime. You mentioned in your request that you were concerned about defining the property specified in this proposal in a manner which would measure the dangerousness of the property. I think that language says what the question really is here, what the legislature intended to do, and what, because some Legislative Reference Bureau drafters divided this statute this way for reasonable, I think, for reasonable purposes.
Well, that raises the question that I wanted to ask you. If that were true, and if the concept here was that you're going to increase the penalty because you're dealing with a firearm which is dangerous, whether it falls into the hands of a child or it falls into the hands of a criminal, then it would seem to me that the value of the property would be irrelevant. Because if you got a firearm but it exceeds $2,500, it's a Class C felony. And if you got a painting that exceeds $2,500, it's a Class C felony. If the legislature was intending, because because of the dangerousness of the firearm, it would seem to me that it would have in C a higher penalty for a firearm, even because money is irrelevant. We're not dealing with money. We are dealing with somebody's life. Therefore, but the legislature didn't do that. And we're looking for legislative intent. So it seems to me, when I read this, I'd say, well, they had special deal when you had a Class D felony. When you had property that is less than 2,500, they're going to up the ante. And they're going to do it the same for the chicken as for the firearm. But when you get over 2,500, they're going to treat the firearm and chicken the same too, because this is money with a six factor if it's a less than a certain amount.
The only response I would have to that are twofold. First, that the legislature probably knew, as a matter of what I believe is common knowledge, that most firearms, particularly most handguns, which are the weapons of choice for many criminals, are valued far less than $2,500. Second, I think it's important to note the state's difference in position with Mr. Lang in that the state believes that if someone walked into a house and stole two firearms, each of them having an independent value of $2,500, that they could be charged with two counts of the theft of an object above $2,500.
That would be a Class C felony.
Right, and it may be that the legislature said, you know what, we want to recognize dangerousness, but 10 years per firearm is the cap on what we're willing to...
I have another question. And the usual rule in statutory interpretation is that you place the definition, you substitute the defined term. So everywhere that property is used, we can put in the words, all forms of tangible property, whether real or personal, right?
Okay.
The singular would be any form. So property is defined in the plural. So if the value of all forms of tangible property, whether real or personal, does not exceed $2,500, and any of the following circumstances is a Class D, it seems to me if you put in all forms of property, that's a plural.
And again, my response to that would be that the overriding concern, however, is getting to the legislative intent.
That's right, and that's what I'm saying, that you read the legislative intent by substituting these words, and they define property in the plural.
But
could have defined it in the singular.
But they more specifically say in the drafting provisions that we want to measure the dangerousness of the property. And if you...
I'm talking about the unit now.
Okay.
Unit would be all the property taken in one house.
Could you re-ask me the question? I'm not sure that I followed.
One of the issues in this case of a firearm is, do you have nine counts for each item of property, or do you have one count for all of them, right? And you're saying each piece of property is a violation of the statute, the taking of each piece of property. And I'm saying to you, property is defined in the plural. It's arguably defined in the plural, right? Because if it was singular, it would be any form of property. So all forms. So if you substitute all forms there, it sounds to me like the legislature would be talking about anything taken in a single taking.
I don't think that's necessarily the interpretation that I would give to that section, because there we're merely talking about the different versions of property, and I think that you have to read the statute in conjunction with 971.36, which specifically says that the prosecution may aggregate aggravate multiple thefts that occur in a single plan or course of conduct. And I believe that's exactly the situation that we have here. In other words, Mr. Trewitzky, the firearms were, by the way, taken from both upstairs and downstairs in the Lehman house. And because Mr. Trewitzky was acting in concert with four other individuals, he is responsible for each volitional act of those four other people. They could have, at any point, taken or abandoned each of those firearms, and in electing to take more, in electing to take the 10, they have exponentially increased the danger to society, which is what the legislature was concerned with.
Counsel, when they go to prove up the case, state certainly the description, identification number, I asked opposing counselors are included. So it seems somewhat curious to me if the state had to prove you had 10 guns, but they could only prove, let's say, that they didn't have the requisite markings or whatever, and they couldn't prove because of the lack of information on the weapon as to where they came from, or there was a follow-up he had on his insurance form that he insured the guns. He'd have XYZ697, but it was wrong. So you could potentially have where they could throw out charges for four of the guns, correct? And then under defense's position, you'd still just have the one charge. That's what I'm getting at. So, but the state actually has to prove for each gun, doesn't it, that was the one that was taken?
That's correct, and that's especially true in this case where each count specified a specific firearm. And it may have been, for example, if the thieves had picked up what appeared to be a .357 handgun and later discovered that it was a cigarette lighter or a squirt gun, the state would have failed its proof and would have lost that particular count.
But wouldn't you have lost, in other words, if there's one count, you just lost that part of one count? That I'm just trying to get to, I was never a district attorney. I was in the defense counsel long ago, but I'm just wondering what impact that would have. Really nothing. It would just be, well, that's part of the charge. They didn't prove that. But if it's one count, then, of course, you would have the other items that you could prove up. It just seems not in sync with the way it's done as to proving each particular charge.
That's correct. And I think that it is the nature of each firearm which makes them significantly different in nature, satisfying the first part of the double jeopardy analysis.
Counsel, I look at the penalty sections here, trying to make sense of these arguments. And I note that a Class C felony calls for imprisonment up to 30 years, and a Class E felony calls for imprisonment up to 5 years, right? You can assume that's correct.
saying is, if the person charges or either steals 10 firearms or 10 items of anything, they can be charged with 10 different counts.
Potentially, depending on the facts before the person...
Well, let's say 10 firearms, let's use it.
Yes.
So that person can be charged, could be sentenced, theoretically anyway, to 50 years imprisonment, correct? Assuming that it's 5 years.
Theoretically, yes.
Whereas if a person steals one item that's worth $30,000, the same value as the firearm, but it's only one, that person could only get sentenced up to 30 years.
That's correct. That's correct.
Does that make sense?
I think that all of this has to be viewed under the light of, we have two kind of interests watching to make sure that these provisions are applied in a fair way. That is, first, prosecutors exercising their discretion appropriately, and second, the sentencing court.
Well, do you think the legislature rationally would say that the stealing of 10 firearms is worth 50 years, but the stealing of one firearm, if it's worth the total value of those 10 firearms, but it's only one, is only 30 years? Is that what the... You have to be arguing that's what the legislature intended.
Yes, and I would submit it's because of that provision in the drafting note which talks about measuring the dangerousness of these weapons, that a $200 firearm, if there are 10 of them, they are put in the commerce of this society, and at that point, the registered owner, the person who is responsible for those weapons, loses control.
Okay, let's take it away from dangerousness. I think your answer to Justice Prosser was that 10 pictures stolen out of an art gallery would be 10 different crimes.
Yes.
Okay, so let's say those 10 pictures are worth $3,000 a piece. And that thief is subject to 50 years. And next week somebody comes in and steals a picture that's worth, just one picture that's worth $30,000. So we've got the exact same value in both, and yet the one is subjected to almost double the imprisonment.
But in that, in your scenario, if I'm following it correctly, consider the harm done to the victim. In other words...
Well, the harm is exactly the same, $30,000.
Three objects of art, which may or may not...
10 objects of art, each worth $3,000. It's got the same value as one object of art, worth $30,000.
Counsel, I think you want to concede Justice Babbage's point here, which is that the legislature did not, in subsection 3D, create a special penalty enhancer for objects of art. It created a special penalty enhancer for guns.
That is correct.
Okay. And that's what makes this different from artwork or baseball cards or chickens. Right?
That is correct.
It does as to baseball cards, but not chickens.
Well, chickens, we can have a debate about whether chickens are domesticated animals.
Chickens or dogs or cats are treated like firearms, so you can substitute the art for very valuable dogs. Valuable not only, say, on the marketplace because of their training, etc., but valuable in terms of the companionship of a particular animal to the person.
Or a corpse.
Yeah, or the corpse.
One person takes one item worth $30,000 from the corpse, and the other person takes 10 items worth $3,000. They're both subjected to very different
things. Stay away from the corpses.
I think you have to stay away from all of the special items, domestic animals, blood, etc.
I never thought of
chicken is a domestic animal.
Well, and I think that that's one of the questions that we need to be looking at. Is our quarrel really that the legislature didn't intend multiple charges for multiple thefts of domestic animals, or is our quarrel that a chicken is not the same as a cow?
A chicken. We can handle a dog, can't we? It's a domestic animal.
Okay.
Good. So.
And I think to look at legislative intent, each of those provisions were drafted for different reasons, and I think that in issue about whether or not multiple charges are appropriate for five family pets, I would submit it is possible to charge with five separate counts in that situation. But that's not the issue that this court is being asked to address in terms of the intent of the legislature and the nature specifically of firearms, which is an object capable of deadly force.
So you think the legislature had a different intent, potentially has a different intent for every one of those six items?
A different basis, yes, potentially.
So on one item you could say charge multiple counts. Another item, the baseball, well, baseball cards included domestic animals.
I would say in the specified items, where they're talking about the item of property that they intended,
corpses or dogs.
Each item, yes.
Firearms, dogs, corpses, floods.
I would, yes.
That's fine. You don't cite 971.36 in your brief, neither does Mr. Lang. How come?
It was an oversight on my part.
And you read 971.36 as then giving clear legislative intent?
No, I think read together the two statutes.
Read together. So it says in 971.36(3), in any case of theft involving more than one theft, all thefts may be prosecuted as a single crime. That then saying that the first one is property belonging to the same owner and the theft, plural, were committed pursuant to a single intent, design, or an execution of a single deceptive scheme. You read that to have the negative that if the property belonged to the same owner and there was one scheme, multiple objects taken, that's multiple thefts, but it's the prosecutor has the authority to charge him as one.
I think, yes, but I do think you need to consider what happened in each of the thefts, but it is fact specific. For example, if a person walked into a house and took a stack of CDs.
What about they take two TV sets?
That, I believe, is exactly what the legislature is getting at here, that you could charge them individually, but
what
could aggregate.
Okay. What about a jewelry box filled with many objects, some worthless, some more valuable? One theft or can you charge multiple for each ring in that box?
I would want to know more about the facts. I believe that you could, but I would want to know more about whether or not the actor knew what was the nature of what he was taking.
Jewelry box is written in gold on it, feels, shakes it, knows there's lots of things in it, has no time to start picking and choosing, just takes it.
I think that you could. Whether or not I would choose to is another matter.
We're not talking about prosecutor's discretion here. Okay. And then you can get that from 971.36.
Yes. Thank you.
Now, before you sit down, what is your, do you agree with the analysis of the Court of Appeals? I note that you proffer as a test for identity in fact, the additional proof, needing a proof of additional fact, and maybe some other discussion. I did not see those kinds of traces, the standard tests for identity in fact, in the Court of Appeals opinion. Do you agree? I know you agree with their conclusion. Do you agree with their analysis?
I understood their analysis to rest in part on the fact that the state had to prove the nature of each of the objects stolen, and that because the state had to prove those additional facts, that they were indeed different in fact.
It seemed that they weren't focusing so much on the state has to prove additional facts. I may be wrong, but I didn't see that normal nomenclature. Instead, I saw them emphasizing on because there are individual identity and characteristics, focusing not on the conduct, not on the proof of additional facts, using that kind of phraseology, but rather on the identifying characteristics of the property. Is that the correct analysis?
I think that is part of it. And I think that there are two reasons, really, why these crimes are different in fact.
I really want to focus on the Court of Appeals analysis. Is it okay or is it deficient? If maybe you're not prepared to answer that, that's okay.
Well, I have the opinion in front of me, and I'm looking at paragraph 10.
That's the paragraph where they do the analysis of it,
or the primary paragraph.
And the court says that they are satisfied that each of the allegedly multiplicities charged are based on sufficiently different facts, the individual identity and characteristic of each firearm.
That's the phrase I'm referring to, and I just don't know if that's the right analysis. And I don't see in it, this opinion, the same kind of, you know, are we talking about same in time and nature kind of discussion that we normally see in multiplicity as the standard test for identity and fact? Are we looking at proof of additional facts? Are we looking at additional volitional acts? Those are all phrases you see in the standard opinion regarding multiplicity. Some have one or the other, some combine them. I don't see those words in this analysis. Maybe that's fine, and I just want your opinion.
I guess I would have interpreted this as being a statement as to the significantly different nature of each object because of their different identity and the facts describing them. Perhaps the court didn't lay that out using the traditional detailed language, but I think that that's what they did. If I were writing the opinion, I also would have added, and besides, each theft involved a different volitional act and the choice to pick up and walk out with that particular firearm.
Argument, I gather, is the same as to taking away and concealing.
Yes.
And the argument is that concealing one firearm is less dangerous than concealing five firearms.
Yes.
So five can still go into the stream of commerce.
Yes, and in fact, in this case, that's what happened. For example, there were initially a certain number, I believe, five firearms, and later two of the actors went and removed two from that parcel.
Does your legislative history language do that?
None in terms of this particular case. And the reason I say that is that statute's addressed to situations that involve multiple separate thefts. Here we have one theft, so the statute doesn't apply. The statute's sort of designed for the scenario where the guy pilfers stuff from his neighbor who's taking care of a senior citizen every day, takes property day after day after day, and this allows the prosecutor and their discretion to aggregate all those amounts and zap them with a felony rather than just, you know, 150 misdemeanor offenses.
Or theft by fraud, embezzlement type of situation where somebody is stealing small amounts from the till over the course of 3 months, and the prosecution can either charge those separately as individual misdemeanor thefts or can aggregate them and get the felony.
So in this case, had he gone and stole thefts 10 different days, they could charge it as 10 different crimes. Theoretically, that statute would allow them to make them one crime and aggregate them. It doesn't make one crime 10 different crimes.
You've got to have separate crimes definitionally under the theft statute before you even get to 971.36, right?
That's my
position. It's your position.
It's
arguable that under A, probably going to the same owner, the theft is committed pursuant to a single intent in design or an execution of a single deceptive scheme. It can be read to cover everything in the house being multiple thefts. But your position is it doesn't, and therefore it helps you.
My recollection was the concern was the senior citizen that people were taking care of and people just keep taking money from. In terms of some of the, you know, oddities, and the question was, is this reasonable or not reasonable? Quite frankly, the way the statute's structured, you take 10 firearms, if the state's correct, if in one taking, it's 50 years. You take $1 million painting, just one of them, it's 15 years. But it's really even more egregious than that. Or if you apply the proposition that each item is a separate offense, you take 10 chickens, it's 50 years. You take $1 million painting, it's 15 years. You don't take chickens unless you're going to eat them or sell them, and so you get another, you know, 50 years for the chickens. But you go down to sub C, you know, 6, you know, you can debate whether chickens fit or not. You take a comb, a toothbrush, and toothpaste from somebody in a nursing facility, you're facing 30 years. $1 million painting, 15 years. You use the toothbrush or whatever, you're adding additional years.
There isn't a toothbrush exception or a special category in 3.
3 sub D6? No, it's property. Any property. If the basis for a theft is each individual item, those could theoretically in the states, there may be separate crimes.
No. That focuses on the circumstances. Here's how I read this statute, and you can tell me why you think this may be wrong. The legislature has defined theft to mean the taking and carrying away, or taking and concealing, or transferring of property without consent, with the intent to deprive the owner permanently. That's the basic offense. Then the legislature has said, we determine the severity of the theft, in other words, what class of felony it is, based upon the value of the property. And if it's under $1,000, it's a misdemeanor. If it's $2,500, $1,000 to $2,500, it's a Class C felony. If it's over $2,500, it's a Class C felony. And then the legislature has said, there are certain circumstances and certain types of property that is the subject of the theft that we would treat differently for penalty purposes because of the nature of the property in question or because of the circumstances under which it was taken. And so we will disregard value, which is the ordinary measure of the class of felony under the theft statute, and we will focus on either the circumstances on which the property was taken, a riot, a flood, etc. Or we will focus on the nature of the property, a domestic animal, dog, cat, not a chicken, or firearm. And said those are special categories of theft that we are treating differently and specifying a higher degree of penalty. Now, what's wrong with that analysis? Just on the plain, obvious language of the statute.
The use of the term dog property in all six of the subdivisions. But accepting your proposition.
Well, except with the two subcategories that focus on the nature of the property. It says if the property is a firearm or if the property is a domestic animal. The other subsections there talk about circumstances. So they have to be treated differently. And this is again why I think the argument about baseball cards and pieces of art, etc., isn't right. That's a blind alley.
Well, I don't know. I disagree, and here's why I disagree. It's because all of these subsections are penalty enhancers. They're not elements.
Okay, well, that, you know.
And here's where the problem arises. Under the legislative scheme here, the way the jury instruction is committees of fighting, you don't even have to know it's a firearm. If you grab a satchel and there's a gun in it, you're subject to the firearm enhancer.
But these are facts which must be proven by the prosecution, are they not?
They have to prove that it is a firearm. They don't have to prove the defendant knew, intended, whatever. But it's a separate thing that enhances what he did.
Right.
The crime is what he did. And the unit of prosecution is measured by what he did. Increases what his exposure and penalty, it doesn't change what he did or involved in.
But they're all facts which must be proven by the prosecution and found by the jury. The value of the property, if it's a value-based theft, or the circumstances of the crime, or the nature of the property if it's one of those types of thefts.
The jury has to make findings as to those.
Right, and that's why the jury instruction reads as it does, right?
Yeah. And likewise, any time there's a theft, you can say, well, it's separate crimes because they have to find separate guns. Well, that's true any time we have separate thefts. If you have a green jelly bean, a red jelly bean, whatever, the jury would have to make a finding as to the different colored jelly beans. The ability to discern differences mean that the legislature intended it? No. In fact, there's multiple firearms that you could identify. Does that mean the legislature intended it? No. That's
let me just see if I understand this. Your argument is that if many items are taken at the same time, same place, etc., aggregate, you say that's all property. Put all the items together, it's all property. Aggregate that, right?
Correct.
And then you go under the penalty, right?
That's correct.
The state's argument, as I understand it, is that each separate unit of property becomes a crime. Look at the value of each separate unit, because that's each count, right? Is that right, Mr. Lang?
I'm not sure if they're saying that, but I think the logical extension of their position is that, because the legislature hasn't given us a way to really draw a distinction from that.
So that each piece, each unit, and then if each unit is a count, then you apply A, B, C, D to each unit, which is each piece of property, right? And then the theme constantly in D is the property, right? Which goes back to value of the property. You're nodding, but that don't come out on the tape. I hear your head nodding in the affirmative.
I'm a little confused with what the court's trying to suggest.
I'm trying to suggest that if each unit of property becomes the count, then that's how you have to apply the penalty.
That would seem to be the case if you fractionate it that way, yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? No?
Thank you.
That concludes our argument of 99-2234 CR, and that